Welcome. We have Bob Marshall back for part three. It's August 3rd, 2009. Bob, what's on your body today?
I'm good. It's been a long time since we've had one of these wiretaps, and I'm ready to dive into the buffet of topics.
Yes. Go
what
ahead.
I'd like to say is I was thinking about the name wiretap, and it came to me that what we do, Bob and Bob here, is kind of like a spinal tap, where we suck out your cerebral spinal fluid, and then we vaporize it into the ionosphere, where it goes straight into the gut. So we're atomizing your cerebral spinal fluid, and we're doing a little review that way, and then we atomize it out there. So it's sort of the wiretap, spinal tap hour with Bob and Bob.
Perfect words, perfect words. Perfect meaning.
Okay, so what do you have? What's the news, Bob?
Oh, I thought you'd have some reactions.
Well, I want to talk about quantum fluctuation, dark matter, and parameta suicide, just to open things up a little bit light.
Yeah, what was that? Parameta?
Parameta suicide.
Okay.
You used that term recently. I can't quite pin down which show.
Right.
You would know, so
yeah.
Maybe you could talk, you fill me in a little bit on the dark matter and parameta suicide.
Meta is to be self-reflexive or to comment on what you're doing. Like people, I'm talking to somebody, I'm aware that we're talking, I'm aware of the meanings of the facial expressions, but I may not comment on them. It's like another level. So then they say when you make art pieces that have symbolism inside symbolism, that's going meta. That's the phrase. And so I said, since we live in a meta global theater Android meme replay, where the Android meme is going meta on everybody, then you don't go meta in terms of forever going more transcendent or more up the mountain. You have to counter that by going under, going non-meta, getting dumb again or unconscious and non-self-reflexive, which would include the other bouncing up metas step by step. So you're doing the stairway to heaven, highway to hell, and everything's coming up roses at the same time, which are the three theme songs we always open up melting titanium with, but nobody hears it. Ion just bellows it out. So I'm saying parameta is not just meta, sort of like ascending. You got to go below and around and beside, which is what para means. Para means beside, above, beyond, below, inside, outside. All right? So it's trying to go past the normal sequence that people understand when they say they're going meta. Parameta.
Okay. So then the high-frequency trading, what's with the low-latency, high-frequency order submission engine, all that tasty words, Bob? What are they all conspiring to convince us of?
Well, did you hear that guy on our show?
Mr. Saluzzi.
Yes. Oh, as a side point, James got a hold of him, and he's going to have him on his show maybe next Thursday.
He's good.
Yeah, and so that's quantum fluctuations of faking motion, because the main point was you had to be micro nanoseconds ahead of the next guy in making these instant trades. Your computers had to be. And it didn't matter if you won or lost this. You had to just keep moving it, keep tickling each other, the ones and O's. And that's panic mode for the Android meme, I guess.
Well, so we're executing a round of noise. That was a great line from Saluzzi.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just do what my clients tell me to do. Then I execute a round of noise.
That's right.
Which is interesting. What's the audible tactile nature of executing a round of noise at such low frequency? No one's going to hear except dogs.
Yeah, except who? Dogs or dogs?
It's such a high frequency that no one can hear it.
Only
the oral submission of the high frequency. This, no one heard this for years until Saluzzi said, I'm going to tell everyone, and they're going to hear it for the first time. They're going to hear the high frequency quantum scam.
Yeah, quantum fluctuations. Yeah, it's like a dog whistle. And but that's
so he's blown the dog whistle so that humans can hear it.
Right, and he's explaining there's a dog whistle going on, and humans can't hear it. Like, they ask him in the interview, I noticed this in Buzz's YouTube, his YouTube, he said, they go, so we can't really stop this. So what do we do about it? He said, no, we can't do anything about it.
It's a juggernaut. It's a religious procession.
It's a nano juggernaut.
It's a nano juggernaut constantly fluctuating.
Yes.
Resume forgetting.
Yes, resume forgetting. But there was another aspect of it. The Android meme, yeah, okay, so there was something, I think I lost it, but I won't come back to it. The quantum fluctuations, I lost it. Game over. Game over.
Talk about executing a round of noise.
Oh, the noise factor. The
right.
Noise. In William Irwin Thompson's, one of his books, he talked about the genius of American culture after World War II, and basically the playful aspect of doing economics the Marxists and the left didn't understand. And the model was set up by black jazz. So the way the music, the spontaneous improvisation by jazz in the 30s set the model for how to do culture after World War II. So let me finish. So he spells that out in one of these recent books. And so I'm saying that, yes, that's during the analog media phase. And he talks about economics is noise, that jazz knew how to work with noise, you know, and make melodies or whatever, improvisations out of the noise, working, sculpting the noise, which certainly Beefheart and Zappa understood. But the point is, we're watching the Android meme replay the black music and what Thompson was pointing out about it economically for itself in panic mode. That's what I wanted to say about the noise.
Perfect words. Your McLuhanite techno-determinism is still quite in opposition. I maintain my Marxist faith, Bob. It's about modes of production.
Yeah.
Perfect words, Bob. That was all Ben. You were there. That was you leading into Ben.
That's right.
We got the Zappa. We got the jazz. We got Ben's befuddlement. He doesn't understand why print, radio, and fucking telegraph and jazz all affect fucking the aesthetics of the economy. He doesn't get it. He says, and I quote, I maintain my Marxist base.
Yes.
So why we need to understand, I want to delve into Ben's mode. Like, why does Ben think this way? Why does he have this belief, and why is he so? He said it. He said what was it, July 15th, Bob and Ben. He said, I maintain my Marxist base, and he accused you again, and this was hilarious. You told him, it's obvious you've understood nothing.
Yeah, is that the one where I say, you're damn stupid, Ben? You were so stupid. You accused me.
You're trying to tell him how technology helps to politicize aesthetics, and he said, I maintain my Marxist base. I don't want to hear about the commodification of culture.
Yes, he keeps...
It's frustrating because you know that he's an intelligent man. He's extremely, you know, articulate. He's very urbane. And then he just doesn't get it.
Yeah, he doesn't...
It's astonishing to hear this incredibly intelligent, erudite individual possessed of great knowledge just not getting it.
Yeah, that he is stuck. And the... I was saying, Ben, you keep accusing me and McClone of being like wired techno-utopians. That is the exact...
Techno-determinist.
No, a utopian. He says that we're utopians. I said, come on, we're talking services and disservices. Where is the utopianism? Is a weatherman a utopian? I don't think so.
He goes, I'm interested in getting to the heart of the matter. And you said, and you agree with him.
Yes.
And then, he started talking about art and how it didn't exist until the Renaissance, and I'm thinking, what about the cave paintings of Lascaux? What the fuck was that?
Yeah. Well, do you notice what is common is that he will state a disagreement with me. He thinks I've said something. He will then disagree, go on for 5 minutes disagreeing, and at the end of it, I said, that's exactly what McLuhan says. Every time he's citing McLuhan, a part of McLuhan, as his defense to distinguish himself from McLuhan.
Which is hilarious, because he maintains this doctrinaire attitude.
Yeah.
And the hilarity of his doctrinaire stance is that he's agreeing with you, but he doesn't get it.
He doesn't hear it, he doesn't know it. He has...
It's like he's got 50% hearing.
That's right. And he has come around. When I send him the Wyndham Lewis, the McLuhan's article on the New Yorker, 1944, which would, a year after he met Lewis, and it's a heavy attack of the New Yorker as an extension of Bloomsbury. So he's using his Lewisian knowledge and pattern and critical skills to nail Bloomsbury, which via the New Yorker. And Ben loved that. He and his wife were shocked at how perceptive the criticism was by McLuhan. He didn't know McLuhan wrote that. And so he eased up. This is way back about show 10 or something. And we're up to 17, 18 this Wednesday coming up. So he, if you'll notice, he starts to say McLuhan's good on, he starts to admit McLuhan's good on some points, but he doesn't go far enough, and it's the economic battle, the class warfare, and the poor people who have no money that he hoiks up as his reason to be.
Now, if he was listening to cash flow, which I suspect he does not listen to cash flow.
Oh, he doesn't know anything that I do.
If he was listening to cash flow, he would know that the intelligent homeless float free. They're off the grid.
That's right.
There's this Marxist fucking utopia. The homeless are fucking floating free.
That's right. And see, he's always laying out a dialectic between aesthetics and politics and this and that, but he does not include a dialectic between the physical and the non-physical. That's what he excludes.
Yeah, he's a prime example of a very, very advanced, you know, Dobbstownian who doesn't look at all of the other material.
Yes.
And he's just focused and he stays within his doctrinaire realm.
Right. And what's interesting, when I press him on the politics, he gives up and goes into celebrating some obscure musician and some scene at a club or something. He goes into Hakim Bey's temporary autonomous zone, you know,
right.
And he celebrates those aesthetic free places and the spontaneous and not aesthetically ruled.
Nonconformist, anti-establishment, all of that.
Yeah, so he flips into that as his personal mode of consumer preference. This is his way of consuming. This is he wants these values expressed, and he wouldn't even say they are values. Just allow something to happen that's not going to be sold, that's not going to be commodified. And so he celebrates these obscure people, and I refer to the one he showed me, James McDougall, I think that's what his name was, a total homeless maniac, but makes very interesting performances. That's the kind of thing, Ben, he thinks that's revolutionary. So he is oscillating between aesthetics as his real core, and then politics, the class war, and he goes one way, and he holds that, and then he switches off and says, "Well, politics is all corrupted. Tony Blair's not a socialist. Gordon Brown's not a socialist. I think that's guy Tony Cliff or somebody. Some guy named Tony Cliff was the last great socialist ranter in England. So he gets." And he gets mad at the mainstream's consumption opportunities or what choices it offers. So he goes inside his little matrix tube. And so he's always shifting. So Ben is quadriphenic and doesn't know it. That's the point. That's where he's a Dobbsian but doesn't know it.
Yeah.
So he keeps oscillating between the ear and the eye, and he doesn't get the tactile. So he says he and his wife are often going tactility at home now. They'll blurt out the word when it seems appropriate. So they're exploring tactility.
Right.
And you guys haven't heard it. We went through the Media Approach to Inflation article. Man, that was the response to that was pretty absurd, you know, from my perspective. But I recognize that there's making going on. Even when Ben, I agree with Ben's objections to McLuhan. You know, I can include them. But then I say, where do we go with this?
Where do we go with his objections?
No, with he and I being quadriphenic or jumping around, he sometimes sounded like McLuhan, other times objecting to McLuhan, me more and more quoting McLuhan accurately, and then not being McLuhan and trying to be over on his level of objection. Where do we go with that? He says that...
You execute the next round of noise.
That's right, we're doing noise, and he says... He, in a way, is only looking for a smart circle of people that he can enjoy talking to.
Right. He's more interested in matching than making.
Right. And talking and developing. He wants us to talk. Occasionally, he wants me to talk about Zappa music or new songs or go into the details of some musical performance, you know, and share the consumption of it.
Right. But that's when he slips into his consumerism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he hoiks that up maybe as a release valve because it's it's not such a daunting topic, you know, to discuss the latest product.
Yeah, well, he celebrates Marxist objectivity, but also subjectivity. He celebrates sexual spontaneity plus mental
so
progress.
That's his private expression of systole diastole.
Yeah, yeah. Very much a tactile quadriphenic systole diastole, bounce more towards the subjective than
right.
the objective. But he can analyze the objective, but he does not tolerate bringing McLuhan's objectivity.
Right. Okay, this whole idea of consumerism, remember when we talked briefly on the phone, we were talking about the new currency.
Yeah.
Now, remind me again, the new currency is?
Your particular spiritual gifts.
Right. Okay. I had a question about your particular spiritual gift.
Well, what I would say might spark something is that we don't know what is spiritual. So it doesn't have to be limited to what we think is spiritual. You can also just say your particular gifts, but you want to emphasize not just your skills and trades and work, but your skills and living with the non-physical is an important new part. Because the non-physical more and more is here, embedded in the physical. So you're
right. So I'm looking at the six principles of the chip landscape. So the fourth principle is the fruit of your experience is a wrapping, a cohesive bonding, a safe place of creation. So if your particular spiritual gifts function as the new currency. No, that's not right.
That is what he's saying.
Yeah. But it could be five as well. The world is wrangling a new position of allowing the orchestrated memes. They no longer work. So if the orchestrated memes, which would be money.
No, everything. The Android meme.
Android meme, right.
We're witnessing the suicide of the Android meme, you know, since last September, and then we're watching it spurts, and that's what Joe Saluzzi was describing, this aftermath.
Yeah, okay. I'm stumbling through this. Let me just ask this directly. I'm trying to see some correlation between the currency of your particular spiritual gifts and the six new principles of the chip landscape.
Yeah.
Why don't you just answer my question as opposed to me trying to stumble through it?
Well, I laid out on the show last week the six principles given to us by ION, who are a zillion entities, so we could say they or it. I sometimes fall into saying he, but it isn't. It's an it, and it's innumerable. So as McLuhan says on the Medium is a Massage album in 67, innumerable confusion. He goes, interesting phrase, innumerable confusion. So ION lays out these principles. So rather than just go into them last week, I took the majority of the words from each principle and said, isn't this what's happening in the chip landscape? Right? So I sort of anchored it in knowable physical reality that we have been talking about for over a year. And then, actually it's not a year. Well, when did I start? Geez, it is a year. I started in January 2008. I was just thinking about cash flow. Yeah, it's a year and a half. Okay, so then I then read the six principles, leaving the chip landscape, and basically using the full set, all the words, to point out the mystery landscape. This is a response to the mystery landscape, but you have to anchor it in a knowable thing, the chip landscape. So those
The response is to us, though, because you maintain that we are the mystery landscape and we make the rules.
No,
so
we don't know what the
mystery is.
Yeah, we.
An analogical mirroring.
I wouldn't even say it's that, but that's the closest we can say. I mean, ION says you are the center of your universe, or you are the center, you are the whole universe. That's what it begins with. And when you're in the mystery landscape, you can't limit it to that. But that's a beginning point.
So. You're proving my which has not been released publicly, but I did have my ION reading, and I maintain the words are the fucking problem.
Yes, and
language is the problem. It is insufficient for the new reality.
Well, you notice Ion's very verbose.
I have to use words when I talk to you.
Right.
And so does Ion. Ion has to use words when he tries to communicate. It, let me rephrase that. It has to use words when it attempts to convey knowledge from the zillions of it entities.
That's right. Now, Ion is...
So we have a problem. NASA, Houston, we have a problem.
Yes. Okay.
Bob and Connie going to come back from the future in the present... that they can tell us about the past.
That we set up so that you could get to the present.
Set up with words.
That's right.
Houston, we have a problem. You got to be a mission control. You're the captain. Captain, what do we do?
Well, we're selling more of the sessions now. I now do hour-long, 75-minute sessions with Ion, and so we crank out the CDs or mega-uploads. Mega-upload is the best way to get it.
Yeah, well, that's a wonderful plug for the business, Bob, but I want you to answer my question here. We have a serious problem.
No, that's the point. Is that
what is the point?
When you hear more and more of Ion, you see that he sees words are tactile, which was McLuhan's point, and he isn't limited to words, but he uses them. But he's yelling through them and always making fun of them and punning on them. And talking real fast sometimes.
Yeah, but here's my issue. His punning, his talking real fast, and his joking about him is still in the form of words. So it's another level. He's using words to mock the words, expose how they're limited. But it's still words. So where do we get the melting titanium on a quantum fluctuating level?
We demand
at the Committee to Clean Up Dontown, we demand quantum fluctuation of all ionic fucking transmission. It most of it was quantum fluctuation. We want co-location. We want to put in a round of fucking noise, and we want latent whatever.
Well, here's how you do it. What Ion is teaching or helping to be a catalyst towards is to get out of the limitations of the word brain and take your meat sack and go into parallel worlds.
So, have meat sack, will travel.
No, have parallel world,
will travel. Okay, good.
That's
practical. Bob, you maintained once, so I think it was Plaza of the Mind, or I forget which one of the many forms that you appear, that I'm only giving practical. It was an email person, not cash flow. Can Bob give us any practical advice for the coming doom? I was like, Bob, what are you saying? I've only been giving you practical advice.
Yeah, and the first practical point is don't be practical.
Right. You got to be homeless.
That's right.
Okay, this brings me back to the cash flow. One of my favorite cash flows June 17th, where we had Steve from Chinese Steve from the United States.
Yeah,
I will quote Chinese Steve because his words are immortal. Never worry anything, just live happy. You are equal to the bank. People have spent too much tomorrow money. Those are three of my favorite quotes from Chinese Steve.
Yeah.
And never worry about your financial status. Just enjoy your life.
Yeah, and I would agree and just remind everybody, follow the fastest path to your joy. That's the key to everything.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed Chinese Steve. I thought he was poetic. Never worry anything, just live happy. I mean, come on. The guy, he's the new guru for our time, Chinese Steve.
Right, but Ion says that don't be stuck on the image of happy. Realize the contrast is there to make you happy. So happy is not limited to one side of the coin. The contrast, the more you understand the role of contrast, that makes more comprehensive happiness.
Well, I don't know. You brought up another issue here. I've been toying with the idea that there is no contrast. If all of our bodies, like you said on cash flow, have now basically disappeared, then there is no contrast. I think that the concept of contrast is something that we've created with our minds.
No, Ion says that, non-physical, when you're in the Gulf, you see and experience. I don't know if you see, but you're everything, but you're not creating anything, but you're aware of everything. You couldn't have this world unless there was a creative principle, and creative principle, as Ion says, it comes at a duality or a contrast. And so this world would not exist, the creative world would not exist without something to bounce off of. So that's what he means, a yin-yang of contrast and response. So the Baudrillard talks about how today, you know, in the last 15 years under Android meme conditions, we had no other. All cultures had another, but it was a real problem that we didn't have another. So he was actually saying we didn't have a contrast. So that is the nature of the software cold fusion simulation, is there's very little contrast for people, but that is a frustrating situation, because how do you be creative? How do you have any staying power? There's no contrast. So that is the contrast. It's a seductive non-contrast appearance to make you think there isn't any, but there is. And then when
So now I think I'm starting to understand that there is, the non-contrast wrapping is illusory.
Yeah.
So, that explains it. Okay, so what I perceive as non-contrast is basically a dupe.
Yes, the Baudrillard would point out how AIDS and all these wacky strange phenomena, would happen because there would continue to be the contrasting other, but it would appear not in, it would just keep showing up in a different kind of form, a strange form. But it was pretty hard to figure it out and say that's another and other. So that's an interesting statement in light of. Now, Ion is saying,
so contrast exists, but it's extremely evanescent, or it's very difficult to pin down.
Yeah, well, I guess you're in contrast, and you don't know how it's affecting you. So, but then Ion's saying definitely the thinning of the veil and the non-physical is touching the physical, and it's. The more you understand that, the more creative, it helps you flow and be more creative. So part of, I guess, that is realizing that contrast is not a problem.
And that, right. And so you, if contrast is not a problem, see, that helps me to understand how all the different bodies have merged.
Yeah.
See, because, again, this, it all comes back to my session with Ion, where I lamented the ridiculousness of language. Here we are. We're going through an inventory, a catalog of different adjectives, trying to get clearer and clearer, trying to focus this notion, this idea, this concept, this percept, this fucking non-percept, all of it. And we're constantly using a barrage of words. And all of them give us a small degree of satisfaction. But it's never complete. So yeah. There's your contrast. So maybe language was
how about this? Yeah, language is the virus.
Contrast. That's what the phonetic alphabet does. The phonetic alphabet creates contrast.
Well, there always is contrast in all kinds of levels, but in simulation environment forms, we got to the point where Burroughs said language is a virus. He, as a writer, was trying to maintain the otherness of language. He was finding it hard to deal with, so he made it a concept of his works. But the language is a contrast, but it's a meta. It's been meted by mixed media as contrast, because the ESP people have today is the ground, is the perception, is the bliss, and they got to deal with not just speech but all the other media as contrast, and then that becomes important. People like the contrast. Like good news becoming bad news because they can't handle the ESP. So that's...
I'm still not fully convinced of the of how this dynamic is working, this dialectic between dissatisfied... we have noise, we have silence, we have contrast, we have language, And then we have...
Exuberance.
Exuberance. Wait, no, exuberance is an offshoot of the emotional body.
No, I mean ecstasy. You have energy, ecstasy, exuberance. That's what people are doing. That's why they take drugs to keep their exuberance ecstasy going. Or they want to have a downer experience.
No, that's fake. That's fake exuberance.
Ah, well, then you're...
See, that's a fake. That's another... That's principle number four. That's the wrapping again.
You're saying that's a fake cocoon.
It's fake exuberance. The drug taking is... I don't know that it's... what's his name there? The guy who... Who's the guy who had advocated mega doses?
Tim McKenna.
Tim Terrence McKenna.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Ion, you know, is with clients, they say, go be an alcoholic in the Caribbean. Ion doesn't judge the drugs that way. Drugs are no problem. That's your fastest path to your joy.
Okay. On the one level, I understand that. But there is another level. Yeah, no, okay. No, there is no other level. No, you're right.
But, you know, just by you saying there's another level, that's you looking for contrast.
It is. And I caught myself looking for contrast.
Yeah.
So contrast is an evolutionary imperative. The impulse or the will to contrast is an evolutionary imperative. So somehow, when the Hoodians came down and they manipulated our voice box and our thumb so we could have whatever they did, that must have been the beginning of instilling in humans the genetic encoding of contrast.
Yeah, because Ion
says... But how does that work with total biology? How does the genetic encoding of contrast come with total biology?
Well, before, I just want to say that Ion does say animals live in bliss. You know, they have no meta, no
contrast.
They don't have any contrast.
Remember last week, they don't need to plan for the stock market crash.
Yeah, they don't have any contrast, and when they get eaten, they enjoy it. It's bliss
right.
When they get eaten. So,
right.
Anyway,
I hope that PETA doesn't listen to this.
Yeah.
We're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah.
The protection for the cruelty of whatever they're called. What does that mean? What does that say for PETA? The PETA. The,
yeah. Prevention of energy towards animals.
Okay. So here are the animals enjoying being eaten.
Yes, yeah, and the PETA provides contrast for the humans.
Right, the humans who have been seduced into anthropomorphizing first nature in a desperate attempt to retrieve something that they already have.
Yes, yeah, they're projecting it into nature.
They're anthropomorphizing first nature. They're bestowing upon elephants who cry and baby seals who fucking look at you with their doleful expression human qualities.
Yes.
So maybe what Bob is trying to say here to all of our animal, I guess animal cruelty friends, is that baby seal up in the Arctic likes being clubbed in the head.
Well, doesn't know, and if you stop clubbing it. According to Ion,
it will file a grievance with Dogstown, and it will claim that Ion is a hoax.
No, that's exactly what it doesn't do. If you stop clubbing it, within a minute or so, when it gets a little better, capable of getting its energy back, it'll start snuggling up to you. It does not remember what you did to it 2 minutes ago.
Right. Okay, so we understand the contrast between animals and humans in this regard.
Yes.
So we come back to the core issue again is language. Language as it relates to memory.
But what is it?
Memory
but,
as
wait,
it retrieves,
but wait,
as
yeah.
It relates to.
Wait a minute. When you say language, I hope you're not just limiting it to what comes out of the mouth.
Not at all.
Okay.
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
That would be like me trying to say that you and Carolyn are New Age flakes. That would be comical.
Yes. So what you mean by language is human expressiveness.
Yes, of course.
It's expressiveness. It's... It's expressionable thought. That's what's going on, and that requires contrast. I mean, I have to have something to bounce off. Now, Ion says...
Yeah, I'm feeling much more comfortable with understanding... these are subtle aspects, but I'm starting to feel more comfortable with understanding contrast.
Yeah, Ion says that there's no contrast experienced in the guff. And that's why when you're in the guff, you can't create. And Ion,
you anticipated my very next thought. You need is contrast a necessary feature or criteria in order to be able to create?
Yeah, the joy of to
why
have the fastest path.
Explain why contrast is necessary to the process of creation.
Ion has no problem or suggests we don't get too upset, but in the end doesn't suggest anything. Doesn't care about us.
It
does not care. But it says, those kids, here's an interesting thing. A lot of those poor kids, when we're going to be on KPFK this Wednesday again on Eben Ray Show, and usually we get a complaint that this is all highfalutin spiritual, you know.
Well, come on, Bob. It's Eben's show, for God's sake. Of course, you're guaranteed a complaint every time you go on.
That's right. And highfalutin spiritual airy-fairy stuff. And so they always say, what about the starving kids in Brazil?
As you say, they have bliss. They float free. What the hell's wrong with you?
Here's what Ion says, is that kids just, new souls love being here. They come in and they don't care where they're born. They're just glad to arrive and ready to mix it up and to have some contrast and then create around it, bounce off it. So it said that many of the unrealized creations that people don't experience here go into the guff, and then the new souls ride in on the unrealized creations and try to actualize them. One of the effects of all these monks meditating for hundreds of years, thousands of years in monasteries, is that some new souls are being born and going into poverty. They love the poverty zones because they can starve and be like monks and meditate.
So I get it. So when you create as a soul, when you choose to come into misery like a starving child in India, that really is your bliss.
That's right. It's your bliss.
Your misery is your bliss, and your bliss is your misery. It's a perfect system.
That's right. And you're surfing on unrealized creations by monks. They deposited whatever they thought they were going to get from the meditation. They didn't get it. And then the new guys say, okay, let's try it ourselves and do it as soon as possible. So they're acting on the thought meme created by monasteries. And they want to do that, and I don't know what they're going to get out of it, but you have the very things created through thousands of years that was trying to spiritualize this world, creating kids wanting poverty, which people might think is negative, but they actually are just acting out on a whole meme, a thought that was thunk by millions of monks. They're living it.
So, the cult of piety, which arises from this, all is part of contrast, which is all natural.
Yeah. There is
so the cult of piety is hoiked up. This hoiks up the cult of piety. This hoiks up the cult of poverty. This hoiks up the cult of Mother Teresa. So Mother Teresa needs all those fucking people suffering. Otherwise, there is no Mother Teresa.
And
it all works together. It's a whole system.
That's right. It's a whole ecology. Mother Teresa wouldn't have a path through a joy if there weren't these starving people or
starving kids wouldn't have a path to their joy if they didn't have this role. They're role-playing. They're so fucking delirious at just having come here that they accept this role.
Well, I don't think they don't have a role. They just want to have experience. They want to say, okay, what happens if I am born in a garbage dump? Like that movie...
What happens if I'm Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that movie. And you know, and people pour feces over me. That'd be great contrast. Let me see if I can work my way out of that.
That's
their attitude. Let me give more crap. I mean, we should celebrate the devastation we're creating on the planet, because for the new souls, that's more testing, more stuff to create off of.
So the slogan or the motto for any new soul is, any reality will do.
Yeah. Hey, the worse, the better. The worse, the better.
The worse, the better. That way I can fucking have more contrast than the guy on Park Avenue.
That's right. And, you know, that's what Bojar was saying. He's saying the sterilization caused by the chip landscape was making the human need for contrast – creating weird allergies and weird diseases because it couldn't handle the blandness of the sterility of a sterilized environment or an environment that's trying to create very little resistance.
Tetrad management.
Tetrad management knows this.
I was going to say, that's what I meant. See, there we go again. The words are the problem.
Yes.
Tetrad management knows this.
Yeah.
Because when that situation is created, it creates, how does it work again? It obsolesces, it retrieves, it flips into. So here we have the sterilized environment coming into into the foreground. So
yeah.
What does it do? It retrieves
wacky
or fucking illnesses or contrast, right?
Yeah.
Well, help me out here, Bob. Do the tetrad management fucking approach to the sterilized environment.
Okay.
What is the sterilized environment obsolete?
That's extending techno-utopianism.
Techno-utopianism.
Remember the rant in Network where the CEO says,
"You're gonna get murdered."
No, not that part. Who corrects him, who says, "Look, the world is one something. There are no races.
One big corporation.
The world's a business.
Incorporated.
The world is a business, Mr. Beale, ever since it came out of the slime." He says something like that. But the point is, he says, we are building a world where every need, every pain, every pressure will be assuaged. There will be anything it would soften all problems, is what his vision was. So that's techno-utopianism. So it obsolesces meaning, purpose, because it actually tries to obsolesce contrast, retrieves, what would it retrieve? It retrieves more contrast, old style, and flips into incredible contrast.
Right.
Connie was just laughing in the background. She liked that one. Yes, it obsolesces contrast, retrieves wacky contrast, flips into incredible contrast, which is where we're at now. The reason the heavens are rejoicing with this economic collapse and cancellation of currency is now people can only operate on what only ever worked. They have to rely on going for the fastest path to their joy. That's no more distraction from that. Though even
right.
I don't know if that's exactly the way to say it. Let me see another way. They have to rely on the only thing that ever worked, says Ion, was relaxing and allowing. And they now have to relax and allow because there's nothing provided for them.
So would that be high-frequency trading? Relax and allow, relax and allow, co-located. You put your server right next to the... And you relax and allow. You put your server right next to the trading, the New York Stock Exchange trading fucking computer, and you relax and allow.
Yeah, you do not care whether you're making money or not.
Yeah.
You just vibrate, resonate, dance.
So it's all resonance.
Dance, yeah, it's a dancing, a very hyper dancing. It's on, off, on, 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 off, 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 on, on, off, on, on, off, off, on, off.
It's a systole diastole of the market.
Yes. Now, that has collapsed.
Let's take a little break here for all of our non-listeners to wiretap.
It needs ecological balance. You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are nations. There are no peoples. There are no nations. There are no third world. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immense, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrol dollars, electro dollars, multi-dollars, Reichsmarks, rings, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the quality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things today. That is the atomic and subatomic
and ionic
structure of things today. And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature,
Bob Dobbs.
And you will atone.
And that was just a little station break for all of our non-listeners.
Yeah, does it continue where he tells about
the future? Yes, it does. Would you like a little more?
Yeah, well, he talks about the techno-utopianism.
Here we go.
Am I getting through to you, Mr. Beaver? You get up on your little 21-inch screen and howl about America and democracy. There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today. What do you think the Russians talk about when it comes to the state? Karl Marx? They get out their linear programming charts, statistical decision theories, min-and-max solutions, and compute the price-cost probabilities of their transactions and investments, just like we do. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime. And our children will live, Mr. Beale, to see that perfect world in which there's no war or famine, oppression or brutality. One vast and ecumenical holding company for whom all men will work to serve a common profit. In which all men will hold a share of stock.
And that is your Ben Watson Marxism. All men will hold a share of stock.
He would say...
There's more. Do we want more? Or
yes,
we...
do some more.
Do some more. And now we're back with Mr. Beals.
All necessities provided. All anxieties tranquilized. All boredom amused. Can I have chosen you, Mr. Beale, to preach this evangel?
Why me?
Because you're on television, dummy. 60 million people watch you every night of the week, Monday through Friday.
I have seen the face of God.
You just...
And it is Ion.
No, Ion.
That evening, Howard Beale went on the air to teach the corporate cosmology of our agency.
I got up here and asked you people to stand up and fight for your heritage, and you did, and it was beautiful. 6 million telegrams were received at the White House. The Arab takeover of TCA has been stopped. The people spoke, the people won. It was a radiant eruption of democracy. But I think that was it, fellas. That sort of thing is not likely to happen again. Because at the bottom of all our terrified souls, we know that democracy is a dying giant, a sick, sick, dying, decaying political concept writhing in its final pain. I don't mean that the United States is finished as a world power. The United States is the richest, the most powerful, the most advanced country in the world, light years ahead of any other country. And I don't mean the communists are going to take over the world, because the communists are deader than we are. What is finished is the idea that this great country is dedicated to the freedom and flourishing of every individual in it. It's the individual that's finished. It's the single, solitary human being that's finished.
Everybody's disappeared.
It's every single one of you out there that's finished. Because this is
longer a nation of independent individuals. It's a nation of some 200-odd million transistorized, deodorized, whiter-than-white, steel-belted bodies, totally unnecessary as human beings, and as replaceable as piston rods.
Well, the time has come to say, is dehumanization such a bad word? If it's good or bad, that's what is so. The whole world is becoming humanoid, creatures that look human but aren't. The whole world, not just us, we're just the most advanced country, so we're getting there first. The whole world's people are becoming mass-produced, programmed, numbered, insensate.
It was a perfectly admissible argument that Howard Beale advanced in the days that followed. It was, however, also a very depressing one. Nobody particularly cared to hear his life was utterly valueless.
Luke.
By the end of the first week in June, the Howard Beale Show had dropped 1 point in the ratings and its trend of shares dipped under 48 for the first time since last November.
That's the clip.
Okay, very good. I would say that's describing the phase I call clone DSP, analog media. It's just the beginning. That comes out in 76, just the beginning of when I say the Android meme surfaces as figure, 1977 to 1990, and he is wrapping up the effect of the McLuhan era, the disappearance in the electronic mush.
Right.
The digital starts to reappear people, re-individualize them. And so everything that the CEO was saying was coming was going to be canceled by the digital, by the voluntary ESP.
Individual. Yeah, but they weren't aware of it at that time.
No, they didn't know. It's an example of that movie pointing out what has disappeared and is now recognizable.
It's like 1984. It was talking about something that already happened.
That's right. And it became popular because we were starting to move into something that was not what the CEO was describing. And like Beale, the people aren't interested in the present. They actually subconsciously are interested in the present. They live it. But they can't talk about it. So that was
No, they're not interested in their perception of the present.
Yeah. That's right. It's hard to talk about. And so that was celebrating what had passed. Now, what I'm saying has happened over the last 30 years, the re-individualization, the re-fragmentation, all done, most people thinking for them, but it was done for the machines, that has collapsed. So we need what would be the new network? You know what I mean? You could take probably all kinds of movies. Maybe The Matrix. That's too passive. You're just in your own little world, creating your little subjectivity.
Yeah, but that's the new digital reality. The new digital reality is YouTube, MySpace, your own little micro fucking tiny, 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 tiny world.
Yes, but it's... You're too passive.
No, The Matrix is good. I think The Matrix is the new network. I would have to agree with that.
No, it isn't. It's.
I can't agree with you, Bob. Resume silence.
Yes. The Matrix shows the development of the chip landscape where everybody's cocooned. But as the Android meme disappears and the chip body surfaces, then you're not in a cocoon. You're walking around. Like Neo is shown, but it is more fragmented than him living in New York City. See, that's an early phase of the voluntary ESP, and we've watched the later phase of it the last 10, 15 years. And so what is a movie that pointed that out? Is it Minority Report? Because wasn't that a whole crisis of whether... No, that was Vanilla Sky.
No, Minority Report...
No, I'm thinking Vanilla Sky. Remember Vanilla Sky? I think that's the title of it. The guy ends up in his own little reality and has to make a decision whether to jump off the building or something.
Right.
I'm sure there's other movies that show the crisis of of Neo and Zion after they win in the last movie.
Right.
You know, they win, they beat the major machines, the chip landscape, and then they've got a new Zion. That comes to a crisis to the degree that Zion is made by the android meme disappearing. So the reappearance, this is something no one has picked up on. Bob is talking about everything reappearing. The albums produced by Nelson Thal emphasize the disappearing aspect. But I've been saying for years on various, well, everywhere I post, about the reappearance. And, of course, Bob and Connie were the first to do it. Now, there's a high, what kind of reappearance? There's the android meme reappearance.
Right.
Which is now MySpace, Facebook, and all that.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own universe. It's the six principles of the reappearance. But that is not enough.
But the reappearance of what? Of the chip landscape? The reappearance of the chemical body? The reappearance of the mystery body? What has reappeared, Bob?
It appears to be the chemical body, but we know...
I love it. It appears that the reappearance is the chemical body.
Yes. And note, I'm called anthropomorphic physical in the chart.
Yes.
So you have different degrees of projection of what is human. So the jackass fad, extreme sports, they celebrate the body and beat it up. So I would say that the chemical body, that people, as the media shrinks, they think they're reconnecting to their physical body, but they don't know that the other three bodies are already still there, just more invisible. So the reappearance is something comprehensive, and it moves toward the mystery landscape, which I've been saying for years. And let's remember, Ion says to me, it gets it all from me, and agrees that I projected all this stuff for 20 years and created Ion. But we don't want to go into that. That's top priority information. But I just want to say that the mystery landscape is where we are now.
Okay. Again, perfect words. You've anticipated my very next thought. I was going to suggest that the post-information reality has aided and abetted the thinning of the veil towards the mystery landscape, correct?
Say that sentence again. The post-information what?
The post-information reality.
Yeah.
Has hoiked up or aided and abetted the thinning of the veil,
yep,
and the emergence of the mystery landscape,
yes,
or the,
yes,
dominance of the mystery landscape. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what Ion.
We have this one.
Yes, we have this one. Ion, it says it's here to co-create with us in more fluid, interactive potentials because of the thinning of the veil. That's what it means with the non-physical is in touch
with
us.
What is here to co-create with us? I thought we were the only ones who had the ability to create. So what is here to co-create?
Very good point.
I fucking took a nap, buddy.
Yes, this leads...
I went into the mystery landscape to get some rest, to come back to be able to think properly.
That's right. Now, here's where you come to this question. I've been getting emails from Ion, okay?
Good.
You know, and so after a while, at first I thought it was JW sending emails. And
right.
Often Ion would send me neat, interesting news stories for cash flow. And so I would thank JW. He says, I don't know what you're talking about, Bob. And so eventually I realized he was not sending them, Ion was.
It was sending
it. It was sending the emails. So, and what's interesting, it got so extreme that...
it got so extreme that...
Yes. Last Tuesday...
Doc,
yes.
My favorite punctuation mark is the ellipsis. I want everyone listening to Wiretap to be aware of that.
Yeah, ...
I love the ... The ellipsis, I think, will make a ferocious comeback on the scene.
Actually... Isn't the ellipsis the practice? No, is it the dot,
no,
dot,
the
dot?
The ellipsis is the three dots, which means there's more to come.
Okay. and that is what Ion's favorite slogan is perfectly happy. Yeah, here's one of his favorite slogans is perfectly happy where I am and ready for more.
Right. That which cannot be spoken of must be passed over in silence. To me, that is the Tractatus manifestation by Wittgenstein of the ellipsis.
No.
He's describing the ellipsis. The ellipsis is something that cannot be spoken of.
No, he didn't.
Or it must be passed over as a symbol.
No, Wittgenstein's He failed to jump into the abyss and the unfamiliar moor, as McLuhan pointed out.
He was terrified of the abyss.
Yeah, he's terrified of the moor.
Frankenstein looked into the abyss, and he saw himself.
He looked into the potential, yeah. He looked into the potential for more, realized he couldn't write about it, couldn't get a visual perspective on it, so he retreated back into silence.
To use a sports metaphor, he benched himself.
That's right.
He said, Captain, I got to get off the fucking field.
That's right. He, just like any monk, he went back into meditation and contemplation. So during the Melting Titanium show, okay?
Yes. Yeah.
We start talking about the convergence of the physical and non-physical. And within 5 or 10 minutes, Ian said, did you see the email we sent you? So I check. I'm taping it on my computer, but I can check my email. No email there. He said, check Carolyn's computer. Or sometimes he calls her Connie. Check Connie's computer. And so I go over there, and it's there. So I click on it, and it's this beautiful sketch of different geometric swooping forms converging, maybe. And so I said, here it is. So I note that it came in at 5:19, and it was about 6:15 when I'm talking about it. And I told Ian, I was thinking about this earlier today and about an hour ago. And Ian goes, yes, we knew, so we made a sketch to show you what you're thinking about. So Ian then proceeds to explain it. And after a while decides I'm not getting it and says, check your email again. This is like at 6:30 because the show is from 6 to 7 my time. Check your email again. I look and there's a new one and it's in my email as well as Carolyn's. And it's the four parts of the convergence broken up into four separate images. So Ion explains that. The point I'm making is, JW is in trance, is citing all this. He could have, in a trance, drawn these sketches. So I talked to him after the Melting Titanium show. I said, did you know I got some sketches? He says, no. And I said, okay, I'll send them. So I sent them, and he looks at them. And he says, I don't know if I could draw like that. And they were pretty good. So I said, will you look in your sent file? Because I'm getting these messages from Ion over the past few weeks, and they register they're coming from JW's email. So he looks, and there's some emails he sent me, and I've got them. But the ones from Ion that I tell him I got, there's no record of it in his computer. All right? So even though it says it came from JW's email, it isn't showing in his computer.
Right.
So
Ion has his own email account somewhere in the mystery landscape, and the server is gone.
The server, Ion is not God.
The server is God. That's a new bumper sticker. I like it. I'm going to print up 1,000.
Yes, if you define God as the creator, because Ion is not God. It doesn't create.
Right.
That's the point. We're the God.
We know that. We know that it does not create. We know.
So
we create.
Ion says the Christians got it all upside down. You know, God is the creator, and you're the creator, the only one creating, so you're God. So we've got this mystery. So the next time I get, next time JW goes to trance, I ask Ion, and this is what I'm leading towards. I said, okay, Ion, you're creating these sketches, creating these emails. You claim you can't create. So how the hell is this manifesting? So we had
And what does it say?
It had a very good alibi.
And what was the alibi that it had?
We get it all from you, Bob.
Okay,
let me finish. Let me finish. There's more.
I am.
Yeah. We get it all from you, Bob. I said, that sketch came from me? Yes, it's an image of what you were trying to figure out in the convergence. And so I said, how do you affect the electrons in my computer? So it looks like I got a sketch and I got an email from you. Isn't that like meddling with the with matter here, kind of sculpting?
Let me interject. It's not how does he mess with the electrons in your computer. How does he mess with the neurons in your brain? So that you can have this image so that he can then send it back to you.
That's right.
It's not the electrons in your computer, Bob. It's the neurons in your brain is what he's messing with.
Yeah, it's both of those. It's always checked out.
Your grievance is, isn't this some sort of interference, which is not allowed?
No, no. Ian says non-physical is in us. So the non-physical in me can, it could not even register the existence of Ion unless there was a non-physical. So the non-physical me responds to Ion, which is a non-physical. So anyway,
like the bird.
What?
Like the bird.
Yes. Now the so he then I said, okay, how do you touch creation, seem to massage it, change it, and yet you're not creating? And Ion
right.
explained that it's a frequency, Bob. Think of us as a filter. What you think goes into the guff, or any matter, it's, it gets, I can't go into the details there, but it goes into any matter as thought and comes back here into the physical. So there's this interplay, the tactile interplay between the physical and non-physical through any matter and other things. Best word to describe that is a tactile dialectic. And he says, all that non-physical is a filter, which has a frequency, and that my creating goes through out there and back. That goes through the filter, the frequency of Ion. That's the and that. And I said, well, frequency is a good word. I mean, we everybody sort of feels that's what a lot of life is frequency modulation. But what the heck
okay,
is?
So,
wait, wait a minute. What the heck is frequency? Can you put your finger on it?
I can. Pick me. Pick me.
Yes. Okay. We got you.
Okay. Well, the frequency would be the resonant interval, or you're interacting with the resonant interval.
Yeah. Tactility again. Yeah.
Tactility again. Which is what I brought up in my one and only Ion session, and I was hoping for Ion to explicate the concept of language, memory, resonant interval, and tactility. And if you recall from my session with Ion, I put it to him. I said, is tactility...
ESP.
Yeah. And I... Well, you have to listen to the session.
No, and it did say that tactility was not ESP.
You're right, but that became controversial.
Yeah.
Afterwards. Because you went, and the very next cash flow, you brought that out.
That's right, and that's when we had Ian on. We called him Ian.
Exactly.
Yeah, because your session was the 1st of April, early April 12th, and then we had Ian on about April 15th, something like that.
Right.
And
yeah.
And Ion was not using the word tactile. I've moved it towards appreciating the word tactile and using it more. The first time that Ion ever used the word tactile was quoting J.W. and saying, a tactile visceral bitch. Okay.
Okay. What do you have to say about that, James? So what do you have to say, James? Ah, well, Bob, I got nothing.
Go ahead, Bob.